Welcome to the Aftershock Central Podcast with Travis and Martin.
Yeah.
Hello, Travis.
Hello, Aftershockers.
Ronnie is not here. He is not on a secret mission. He ditched us to go watch a baseball doubleheader. Shame on him. That's all I gotta say. What's more important to you, Travis? Is it comics or is it baseball?
It's undoubtedly comics, but, you know, I went to a baseball game last year and had a lot of fun, so.
Sure. It's fun. So, it's baseball's fun to visit. Great. Does Ronnie do a Baseball Central podcast?
Not yet.
Yeah, not yet. I bet he would love to do one, though. Ronnie's all about some baseball. Anyways.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about some books. We have no news, so we're just going to get right into it and kick things off.
No news is good news.
Well, sometimes.
So good news, folks.
First up on the list, we have Animosity number 21, written by Marguerite Bennett with art by Elton Tomasi, colors by Rob Schwager, and letters by Carlos Mangual. This is a new name. I don't recognize that name.
Nah.
Cool. I love seeing new letterers. Alright, so let's talk about this book. We finally got to see the massive acid trip that was teased in the previous issue.
Yeah, dude. It doesn't disappoint. I think they did a pretty good job.
I mean, how do you know?
No comment, but, it's visually stunning.
It
right?
is,
you
it know? Is.
And yeah. Pretty, like, crazy in parts.
I gotta shout out Elton on that, because there's some really interesting, panel layout choices made in this issue. I think it fits really well with this whole acid trip. Well, it's not acid, but this whole trip that Jesse and Sandor are going into. I think he does a pretty good job at really capturing that type of scenery. Not quite accurate. I mean, I wouldn't know. I've never had this experience personally. Can neither confirm nor deny. But I think it was really well done artistically.
Yeah, I mean, it's trippy, dude.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you, all right?
Sure.
Like, they're both tripping balls right now, right? Like,
yes.
Like, are they just tripping balls, or is any of this, like, quote unquote, happening?
Well, Travis, I think that's kind of briefly discussed when Sandor meets his dad in this hallucination. Why would it not be happening? I mean, it's happening in his brain, right?
Yeah, I mean, but is it a pure function of, you know, hallucination? And, you know, like, obviously, like, you know, I think psychedelics have been utilized for kind of self-realization for a long time.
Of course.
So I don't, like, yeah, certainly, you know, it's a question of whether it's all happening within his own mind, or whether when he and Jesse are talking to people, whether there's actually somebody talking back.
So a couple things. So number one, I don't see the difference between those two statements. Because the hallucination is experienced by the mind and reality is experienced by the mind. So either way, the experience is the same.
Yes. I mean, subjectively, yes. Objectively, no.
There is no objective. All reality is subjective.
Yeah. I mean, fair enough. You know, so, like, I guess we agree then that it's, you know, ambiguous that whether, like, a god of animals exists, you know?
Yes, correct. Yeah, I think, I briefly mentioned this last episode. I do wonder if Marguerite has had one of these experiences. I have no shame in talking about these things. I have had one of these experiences before. Maybe more than one, who knows? But we'll just say one. And I think it's interesting the way that those experiences come about. Because sometimes, at least from my personal experience, they do seem more real than, like, your reality. You know what I mean? I don't know if you know what I mean. You don't have to say if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. So they seem more real than reality. And I think that's why, you know, you often hear stories about, I think in particular with like DMT trips, for example, right? Where you meet these entities and you're like become one with the universe or whatever, right? You already talked about people have been using psychedelics for thousands of years to do these realizations. And that's something that comes up here, right? We do see like cave people, I guess you could say, show up as part of the hallucination when we're talking about like this whole relationship between man and animal and God, and magic and reality and how all of that is kind of one thing. And I think ultimately the takeaway that I got from this is that all these problems that we're seeing in this world are mostly caused by people, because people have forgotten that sort of connection to the rest of reality or unreality. Whereas the animals maybe still have that, except, and I think this might be one of the points that the God of Animals is making when Sandor's talking to him, where he's kind of saying like, will you become like people now that you have conscious thought? And I thought that was a really interesting point to make, based on this whole trip reality that we're experiencing in this issue. Like, is the fact that the animals are now conscious making them as bad as people who have forgotten, like, what reality really is, right? Like, people have made this fake world to live in. Well, the animals do the same. And the way to fix that, according to the God of Animals, is to not worry about any of that stuff and just live your life and appreciate what is here and now.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it was pretty profound. Yeah. It's one of those things that's like really hard to do in comics. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Like, I think that, you know, seems like the nature of, you know, psychedelic experiences is that they are impossible to record and translate, like, when you're not in the midst of it, you know, when it's not actually your experience.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, yeah, I think I'm totally down, you know, from the perspective of, you know, like, this is their trips, this is their vision quests, you know, and like, it's their mind, like, making new connections.
Mm-hmm.
And for Sandor, seems like, you know, he's channeling this thing that basically is just like, guess what? You know, like, you're an animal, you know? And so, like, be an animal, basically, you know?
Right.
Like, don't worry about morals. Like, just live. You're, like, you exist because evolution, you know, basically rewarded things that could survive. So you're kind of only requirement is to survive.
Right.
And that surely does, like, basically, like, fly right in the face of the wake, you know? Like, if the God of Animals were a real thing, like, it probably wouldn't be a fan of this thing that all of a sudden made animals like humans, where they, you know, like, they're distracted by other things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They have stuff to get in the way of survival.
I'm curious what you thought. So when Sandor meets the God of Animals and the God turns into his dad, and Sandor's like, you know, how dare you, like, whatever. And he's like, you should be glad, you know, you're not talking to your mother. That seemed like kind of an interesting dialogue between the two. What do you think that the God of Animals was trying to tell Sandor when he said that?
Yes, I also thought that was a pregnant moment. I just thought it was like referencing like new backstory for Sandor, you know, like something to do with his relationship with his mother. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you would think that this like psychedelic trip would confuse me, but that was the least confusing part to me. Bringing up this parental relationship was what was confusing to me. And I do wonder if some of that has to do maybe with what the god was saying about, you know, just live your life. Maybe now that Sandor has this consciousness, this is something that he thinks about on a regular basis, and maybe kind of explains his relationship to Jesse. Because it seems like his parents were not the greatest, right? But at the same time, like, they were dogs and they didn't have consciousness. So, like, of course his dad would, like, go around, you know, humping other dogs in the backyard or whatever, right? Like, that's what dogs do.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, like, I don't know. It seems, I guess, strange that Sandor would judge his father for being an animal, you know, and acting like animals, doing exactly the thing that, like, the god of animals is saying to do.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't know.
But that's part of the whole thing, right? Is, like, the animals now are, like, I can't believe how we used to be, you know, like we used to kill each other. We used to like bone, like in public and, you know, like whatever, you know, like things animals do, mm-hmm. you know,
mm-hmm.
and they're like ashamed by it. And I think that's like, I feel like they in passing, like in this issue, talk about like the apple of knowledge, like
yeah.
with vis-a-vis like the human story. And, you know, like, and it's kind of like, oh, yeah, like, and after that, like, we understood the concept of shame and sin.
Right.
You know, and that's something that the animals didn't have prior to the wake. So, yeah, like that's their apple, the forbidden fruit.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. In terms of the snakes, so the snakes get Sandor and Jesse on this trip. So they can figure out, like, why the wake happened, right? But throughout the issue, you see, like, a couple of snakes popping in. Like, they're watching the trip happen. So my question to you is, if they can kind of be in this altered reality, why is it that they can't find the answer to that question themselves?
I mean, I wouldn't assume that it's any more reliable that the snakes are really there than, like, the voice that is speaking to Jesse is really there, you know?
Mm.
She was just surrounded by snakes, so maybe the snakes wandered into her trip, you know? Stranger things have happened.
Sure, I guess. I found that curious because it was, there was a couple scenes where the snakes show up, and then in one, like when Jesse finds that portal that she goes through and she's hanging out on this like, bridge in the middle of space, the snake kind of starts falling to pieces and disappears. So that's why I wondered if the snakes don't have access to this kind of thing also. I mean, if you read like trip experiences, a lot of people report seeing like snakes or dragons or like some kind of animal like that show up in their hallucination. So I wonder if maybe any of that was related.
Hmm.
Yeah. But obviously it's not.
I have not heard of that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You should look into it. The trip's not going very well though, it seems, right? Or maybe it's going extremely well. But the snakes don't know because they've never had somebody get to this particular point of the experience, maybe, right? Because I don't think they haven't had humans before, right? It's all been animals that they've tried.
Yes, she's the first human.
Yeah, she's the first human. Because at the end, they're freaking out, right? Like, they're both stuck in this hallucination, and the one snake's like, go for help, find the worm, bring us the land worm. Which I'm curious to see how that plays out. Because the land worm's basically just like a dragon. And, mm-hmm. And, you know, in Animosity Evolution, we also had this, like, big mythical beast, right? Like the Kraken, the giant octopus in Evolution. And I wonder how having another of these, like, giant mythical creatures impacts the story. And at some point when we get back to the West Coast, right, when Jesse gets to that point, if there's going to be some kind of meaning behind that whole thing. Because it is playing with, like, mythological tropes a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, like mythological animals is a whole other layer of like something you could lay on top of this framework. I mean, but they probably already had like supernatural knowledge and such, you know. But wasn't there already a thing that they called a dragon that was something crazy?
I don't know where.
I think it was in Animosity proper or something that they had, like, I don't really remember what it was. Hmm. It was some kind of animal that they called, like, the Red Dragon or something, I thought.
Yeah, and, I don't remember that.
Well, geez, if I'm complaining about something else, I apologize. But, like, if not a crazy theory that maybe this is, like, a real animal that exists that they call the Lindworm.
Sure. And it could be just some... like giant snake, right? Like a python or something, or an anaconda, just like a huge snake. But yeah, I mean the landworm's got a lot of mythology behind it as well. So I found that curious. It's almost like, you know, Sandor meets the god of the animals, but it's like the landworm's like the god of the snakes.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so we talked about like Sandor's vision. I just want to briefly, maybe just mention that, like, Jessie, like she's having a whole other thing.
Yeah.
And, like, her trip is basically, like, you know, she doesn't actually want the answer that, like, the snakes asked about, you know, like, she doesn't, I think, necessarily care about just kind of how the wake happened and why or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, like, it feels like more broadly she like wants for a, you know, like a deity or something that like is responsible for everything, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, like she's hearing this voice, you know, that's the basically like kind of the response is like, okay though, but what if there isn't a being that is like, is responsible for all that, you know, like what if stuff just happens, you know? Sure. Which is like, I think if you ever like have to go through grief counseling or something, that's like the thing that like that's where everything starts, is kind of a like, you know, life's not fair, you know, like stuff happens, you know, like,
yeah, like there's no puppeteer, right? Like there's no strings, just things are the way they are.
Yeah, but I think you. That is like kind of a not an uncommon like trip experience, is to kind of, I don't know, like be confronted in a forceful way with the idea that like, you know, there is no God, you know, mm-hmm. that like that it's all just stuff happening, and you know, like you're an animal, as we discussed earlier, and you know, like. All of this stuff is, you know, the universe that's built on top of your kind of primal biological framework.
So, yeah, I think that's an interesting point. And, I mean, there's definitely a lot of, like, anti-religious commentary, right? Maybe anti-religious is the wrong word to use. But to me, at least, it's almost like the story is implying, I mean, throughout the whole series, not just in this particular issue, that like there is no reason for this, and also that there is no God, at least maybe not in the way that people believe it to be. And I think, you know, we talked before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about the long pages that we had. There were a couple scenes out of the Bible, and it's just like a one panel thing on a white page, and it was mostly text. We're being told these Bible stories, basically. And we've seen a lot of like biblical imagery in this whole series, both this book and in Evolution, I think. And I think that is one thing that Marguerite is trying to say the whole time. And maybe that's part of the point that the God of Animals is trying to make. You know, that when people lost their connection to animals and nature, and started creating these fake worlds around them, they also created beings to justify those particular beliefs, but none of them are there. With that said, though, it's curious that there is a God of Animals, Right? Like, if there is no God, then why is there a God of animals?
And well, because that's just Sandor tripping.
Right.
I thought we already.
Yeah, so that goes back to your thing.
That's just what he wants to see, or something, you know.
Yeah, or maybe it could be that they're just on, like, different planes of consciousness, too, right? So the animals have just become conscious, and they're still trying to justify why some of these things happened. And so they've created this god of animals. Whereas once people take this veil off, they realize that there is nothing but just the universe. And maybe at some point the animals would get to that point if they allowed themselves to be and quit worrying so much about the stuff that's going on around them. Right, then they would realize, just like before the wake, that just everything just is. And Jessie can experience that because she has no bias towards anything, right? She's not biased towards people or towards animals. She just wants to exist. And so she can ultimately see the reality of things. Subconsciously, because, I mean, she's a kid, but she can see those things. And maybe that's why the snakes wanted her, because she can see beyond all the illusionary trappings that people create because she's a child.
Well, I mean, further to that, they kind of take a minute in this issue to talk about that she's special, right?
Yeah.
That she's like a creature of love. Mm-hmm. And like they kind of seem like they frame it in a negative way, like it's you know what I mean, like it's a good thing, but that like it's, I don't know, like a potential weakness, or you know, it's like a liability, it's like pretending some bad, like, you know, outcomes. I don't know, like I felt like they were a little bit like pointing towards something with like how they were talking about her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But also I don't know like what the takeaway is if like, sure, I understand the message of like you're an animal and such, but like, you know, the animals are now part of society, and you know, like they can't just kill people to survive, or right. Animals, right, you know, right. Like, so yeah, like that's a like unnuanced takeaway from this like psychedelic experience.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So I don't know.
Let's wrap this one up.
All right. I'll go 4.5 out of 5.
Yeah, I like it. I think I'm going to go 4.5 out of 5 as well. Really solid. And just like always, there's a lot to dive into with this book. So good chat. Good chat.
Yeah.
All right. Next book up is Mary Shelley, Monster Hunter, number 2. Written by Adam Glass and Olivia Quartera Briggs, with art by Hayden Sherman, letters by Sal Cipriano, and cover by Hayden Sherman. I really like this issue. I know I had a lot of questions after the first one, but I think a lot of those questions were answered, and I think the story really took a turn in the way that it could continue with the next issue. There was a lot of things in here that I did not expect to happen, but I really enjoyed it. In particular, Frankenstein's character, the Victor's daughter. I think she's got a really interesting story, and there was a lot of really cool commentary about like gender roles in, you know, this Victorian era, which really aren't much different than today. And I think maybe that's why the story kind of resonated with me really well. You know, it's all veiled in this horror story that we're being told. But it made a lot of sense, right? Like you hear about these kind of stories of women being oppressed, or like, you know, like right now we've got all these abortion bills passing all over the place, right? In Arkansas or in Georgia and whatever. I think Missouri's got one coming up. So it's really timely that the story would come out now.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's obviously one of the bigger thematic things of the story, right? Is yeah, that it's, you know, Lady Dr. Frankenstein. And, you know, this issue is very steeped in the idea that, like, that avenues were closed to her. And so she posed as a man, and that didn't work out. And, you know, like, basically having gone through that, like, her mission is for, you know, equality for women. So, like, I'm always behind a narrative that's about equality for women, well, you know? Like, that's like, specifically topical, but sure. It's always good.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting the way that she went about doing it, right? So as a kid, she was very impressed with her dad's work, right? He was a surgeon. He was fantastic, whatever. And she wanted to be like her dad. So she posed as a man and started going to medical school. I love how, like, they would show her strapping her breast down, right? And she had the short, manly haircut or whatever. And then, like, what luck that the guy that she's posing at, I think it was her cousin, if I'm not mistaken, ends up doing, like, a triple murder or whatever it was, and she gets kicked out of school. So in order to continue doing her work, she wants to create a man that she can have as her partner, kind of, just so that certain doors will be open for her, just for the simple fact that this man is there. And I like the fact that, I mean, that obviously this is part of the plot, and kind of the twist on the original Frankenstein story. But, like, I think in this particular era, for example, a woman would have maybe gone and gotten married, right? And she still wouldn't have the rights. She probably wouldn't be able to own property or anything like that. But those doors would be open because she had a husband. But she is, her ideology is so far beyond that. That she chooses to create a man in the monster that I guess we'll see in the next issue, right? Because we see him in the last page. But she chooses to create a man to do that instead of just following the social norms and marrying in order to do this, right? Or, you know, whatever. Hang out with her brother. If she had a brother, like, hang out with her brother. And that would be her way to open certain doors. But the thing is that the things that she wants to do, even that wouldn't fit into that, right? Like, the only way for her to continue being a scientist is to pretend in public. And she couldn't pretend that she was actually following these norms and marrying a man to open those doors.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little bit kind of, like, maybe unclear about the specific motivations, you know? Because, mm-hmm. like, I don't know. My read from this issue was that she's, like, working on a prototype, you know, and it's like the ideal man, you know, like made by me and educated by the daughter of Mary Wollstonecraft, mm-hmm. you know, like in kind of the feminist, like, philosophy.
Yes.
I don't know, yeah, like, to your point, what, you know, that, like, man is going to do specifically, like, to wit, right? You saw in the end of the issue, he's a Frankenstein, you
right,
know?
Right.
Like, he's patchwork sewn together. So, I know enough about the Frankenstein story to know that when somebody like that shows up, they don't wait to hear about your philosophy on gender equality.
Sure.
Generally, they tend to reach for a torch.
Yes. Well, I don't.
So what are these, like, perfect male allies going to do, practically speaking?
So with that said, I think this particular one is obviously not like a final product, right? So I think ultimately the goal is to enlist Mary to educate these PBS in this feminist ideology that came through her mother. But, like, ultimately the goal is to create, like, millions of these, right? So, like, any woman that doesn't want to be subject to typical societal rules can have this, like, their own Frankenstein monster in order to be able to fulfill their own dreams and ideology. And ultimately, when there's enough women that are actually feel empowered because they have these pet monsters, that will cause, like, a societal shift, right? Like, I think that's ultimately what the goal is. I think Frankenstein at one point talks about like building an army of these things. So I think that's the goal. Like, they're just not there yet, right? Because this is the first time that she's found a man with a brain smart enough in order to begin to accomplish these goals. But I don't think this particular man is going to be the one to do it, right? This is part of the experiment.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I guess I'm unclear if you're doing the Frankenstein thing, you know, like I feel like the hardware of the brain is less relevant than, you know, the software, you know, like we think that, you know, the guy that they killed for this win, like that his, I don't know. It seems strange that they're like, oh, but it's the quality of the brain that made him a genius rather than all of his education and training, you know, and when you reboot it and he comes up like a, you know, a newborn in a monster body, like you got to train it from scratch. I don't know. I guess we'll see what he's working with in the next issue when Mary's like trying to run him through the paces.
Right. Yeah. It's an interesting plan. Obviously very macabre and it fits very well with the theme of the book. And you know, just to throw it out there, Hayden's art is perfect for this book.
It's amazing, dude. I mean, as I said, though, it's like it's so different from what I expect from him, you know? Like, it's not – he hasn't done, like, period stuff before, right?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I could be wrong.
Yeah, and he does the colors too, right?
Yes.
Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know? It's very stylized and distinctive.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, I'm curious to see how it goes. I liked how quick Mary was to join this plot, right? Like, I think she was maybe freaked out at first, but as soon as Frankenstein explained it, she's like, yeah, all right, I'm down. And like, everybody's surprised, right? When she goes and meets Percy and everybody else, they're like, she's like, yeah, everything's cool. Like, you know, we gotta get going. And they're like, you're not freaked out? Like, we've been hearing people screaming and, like, weird stuff happening around the house for weeks. And you spend, like, 2 minutes with this woman and everything's cool. And she's like, yeah, everything's cool. Like, I gotta go. I'll see you guys later. I thought that was interesting how quickly she was convinced. But it makes sense, right? Like, if you know anything about Mary Shelley, it makes sense. Like, she was very young when she wrote Frankenstein. But in terms of her ideology, she was definitely very much ahead of her time.
Well, it would suggest to me that, like, what might explain this is if she felt bored or, you know, hemmed in, limited, like, that she would want this kind of diversion and, you know, like, I don't know, like, feel motivated to try to be a force for change. But, I mean, I think it's interesting that, like, I feel like they very much established in this issue that her husband is like the perfect man, you know, like Dr. Frankenstein, I thought took a second to reference that, like that her husband's Percy Shelley was like about as good as they come for men. And he takes a moment in this issue to like talk with her privately and being like, you know, I'm worried about you kind of, you know, like,
what's,
you can talk to me.
Yeah.
You know, so she's like ignoring the perfect man to help build her own perfect man.
Right. And I mean, the romantics were very much like the hippies of the 1800s, right? So I get all that. They were definitely much more progressive than the rest of society. But even then, like, she's still living through the stereotypical role that she would have, right? Like, she's traveling around Europe with her soon-to-be husband. Like, that's her role. You know, when they were at the party, she didn't speak. Like, every time anything was going on, like, he would talk for her. Because that's the role that's expected of both of them. And that might be different privately, but, you know, what they're trying to achieve is more like a cultural change, right? Something more fulfilling than that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I mentioned it before, but to your point about cultural change, thematically, I don't know. Like, I don't know what I make of the idea that, like, basically feminism and rights for women, like, can't exist without A, you know, men, mm-hmm. like, you know, and B, violence. But more thematically speaking, men. Like, isn't that, like, totally defeatist from a feminist perspective? Like, of course you need men to be on your side, I guess. But, like, I don't know if it seems anti-feminist to think that you can't do it without them or something. I don't know. Like,
I see what you're saying, but I also understand why they're doing it this way, right? So what you're saying is what they're doing is anti-feminist because really it should be the change is driven through just the sheer willpower of, like, we're strong women. And I think what they're trying to do is kind of work their way in a backhanded way, right? So, like, Mary's mom was this kind of person that fought for women's rights. But, like, here we are, and Mary is in no different a place, right? So maybe that's not necessarily the right way to do it. Maybe the right way to do it is to have men and women work together and come to the mutual understanding that this is the way that things should be. And now, granted, it's all veiled in this monster story, but they're trying to make an entire cultural change, right? A shift. And sometimes sheer force is maybe not the way to do it.
I mean, like, you know, isn't that how women's suffrage went down? You know, and, you know, like, kind of less spectacularly speaking, like, prohibition? Like, wasn't it kind
sure.
of,
yes,
like,
that's
wasn't that women who stepped out and were like, no, we actually have power, and they did it. So I guess this is just, like, they weren't woke enough to be, like, they still thought that they needed a man or a monster
right.
to get it done.
And this is still, what, like 80 years before all that stuff, so.
Yeah. But, you know, it's like, it's thematic, you know?
Sure.
Like, so I guess maybe that'll be the conclusion is, like, turns out they didn't need monsters at all.
Right. Exactly. All right, let's rate this one up. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5. I love this book.
Word. I'm going to go 4 out of 5.
Shame on you.
And I love Hayden Sherman's artwork, dude.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Good stuff. All right, next week we have a lot of books next week. We have Dark Red number 3. We have Dead Kings number 5. We have A Walk Through Hell number 10. And brand new book, Killer Groove number 1.
Ooh, I've read it.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
It's very good. Spoilers! Killer Groove's very good. That's going to be it. If you want to get in touch with us, on Twitter is always the best place. At Rumbar316, at The Great Magnet, at Geekvine, and at AftershockPod. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next week.